What's it like working for Stardew Valley? Welcome to That Co-op Podcast, where controller meets conversation. I'm Anna.
And I'm Ed. If you're tuning in on your favorite podcast app, don't forget that we've got a video version on YouTube at That Co-op Couple, where we play games while we chat.
We reached out to Stardew Valley and got a response from Cole Medeiros, the creator of Stardew Valley, the board game, who now works logistics and product development for the company. He was nice enough to sit down and talk with us a bit about his career, influences, and more.
Don't forget to comment and subscribe. Let us know your thoughts on the interview. And without further ado, please enjoy our conversation with Cole Medeiros. Thank you for joining us. Yes. We really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us for a little bit.
Yeah, I love chatting about making games, so I could talk forever about this stuff.
Oh, perfect. Well, we won't take up too much of your time because you're being very generous.
No worries.
But if it's okay with you, we're just going to jump right into it. All right. So it looks like you have a lot of different interests. You're wearing a lot of hats, from video games to board games, film, and possibly Star Wars musical. Is that right? So could you kind of tell us a little bit about what you do and kind of how all of those interests come together?
Sure. It took me a while to get to this point, but I've decided I'm really interested in telling stories, and the medium doesn't matter so much. There are some I'm more familiar with and some I've just, you know, had chances to do stuff, like, for example, the Star Wars music video that I participated in a while back. And growing up, I always thought I was going to get into movies because I was just big on acting and writing and the idea of shooting and editing and directing. But I didn't end up going that way. I was also always drawn to games. And so I realized, oh, why do I like games? And it's really because I think good games have stories either baked in or they kind of generate stories. So that's kind of the common thread, I feel like, with a lot of my interests.
Nice.
That's awesome. Do you have a favorite movie?
Ooh, I'm really bad about that because I'm always like, I have lots of favorite movies. The one I come back to is Jurassic Park. It's probably my favorite. And then, you know, the Lord of the Rings are great. And
you're talking her language.
Alien movies.
Yeah, you're talking her language.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
It just goes on and on. Yeah. But yeah, I love those.
Yeah, we're both music teachers and musicians. So anything that John Williams has written is music gold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, there's just something. I got to see him conduct in concert once, and it blew my mind.
Now you're going to make her really jealous.
Oh, my God. That's like a dream, which I know won't happen anymore, but like, gosh.
It was really cool. And then Steven Spielberg showed up, like, surprise guest, and I was like, just my brain exploded.
Yeah.
We got to see him at the Kennedy Center. The NSO performed Jurassic Park live. He wasn't conducting, but he was there answering some questions before. And I was just like a puddle. Like, I was just like, oh my God. Yeah. So yeah, no, that's so awesome.
Yeah. he just nails the emotion, you know? And it's so memorable too. It's like, I can hum like the whole soundtrack, even the less popular songs from Jurassic Park.
Right? We could have like a whole podcast on just like music of movies and video games. Like, it's just maybe we should do that. Like,
we
we'll just pivot. Yeah. We'll pivot. No.
So what is your role with Stardew Valley then?
Yeah. So it's interesting. The way we got connected was a mutual friend sort of put us in touch, because I'm always into board games and card games. And so it was like, hey, you know, this friend reached out to me, would you want to make a Stardew Valley board game? And I was like, of course, that would be awesome. Mm-hmm. So he connected us in a multiplayer game of Stardew, which was very stressful for me because I was thinking, here I am playing with the creator, trying to like hoe a straight line of dirt while I'm telling him about my idea. And Eric was very, you know, just relaxed and chill, as he usually is. And he was just like, oh, okay, maybe, you know, we'll see. And we spent about a year kicking around ideas until something really took. And then he said, wow, this is incredible. You made it into a board game. And then we spent another year, you know, ironing out all the issues and just developing it. And then towards the end of that, right at the end, he said, hey, you know, I could use some help with just all of the stuff that comes along with this company that has built around this game. Because he doesn't really want to be mired in the logistics. And so that's kind of my job. It's like a catch-all of emails and contracts and product development and anything that's not game development is what I do, so that he can just focus exclusively on making Stardew and his next game, Haunted Chocolatier.
Wow. What a cool gig that kind of happened. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's funny because like Stardew Valley at this point is what, almost 10 years old?
Yeah.
It's got to be almost 10 years old now. And we just recently played it for literally the very first time.
No, really?
Like, I've had it downloaded on my Nintendo Switch, but never ever did anything with it. So we both sat down to play it for the first time. Obviously, it's one of those games where, like, anyone who knows video games has heard the term Stardew Valley and will tell you that it's probably one of the greatest things ever created. But we just never played it. You know, and so doing a little bit of research for that, doing a little bit of research on Concerned Ape, we came across Stardew Valley, the board game, and we're both board game people too. We love playing board games and all that stuff too. So it was like, gosh, there's a Stardew Valley board game that we have to check out now at some point. We gotta get our hands on that at some point. It's wild how, you know, 10 years later, this is all just like, it feels brand new to us.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like we're just, and it seems like the Stardew Valley community seems really, they seem like a good community of people. Like, we were very open of like, how dare we not ever play this 10-year-old game? And they were like, no, it's cool. It's great that you're just finally playing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. It's, you know, we were expecting people to like roast us alive on the internet and, and all that stuff. But no, they were like super chill about it. They loved it. It was great. So yeah, it was a lot of fun and a great game, obviously a good reason. So we're going to have to find the board game at some point too.
Absolutely. I'm excited about that. And I was actually wondering I'm sure it's a very lengthy process. So like in layman's terms, like what's the process of creating a board game? Like in my mind, I'm just picturing like cardboard and like cutting out like little, which obviously I'm sure there's so much more to that and probably not even part of that. But like what's the process of from start to finish of creating a board game like that?
Yeah, it's a process where typically it starts with an idea where you're like, okay, I like to start from the emotion. What's the emotion I want somebody to feel? So Stardew kind of came with all that preloaded. It was like, here is the game, here's the emotion, and it's just about translating it. I like to paper prototype usually, you know, get some, like you just said, get some paper, get some cardboard, start cutting stuff up. I like to often draw the idea out. So it's like, I'll draw the decks of cards and I'll draw the board so I can kind of visualize the whole thing and imagine how it's all connected. And then it's really just like testing. So with Stardew, I just started putting stuff down and I actually started digitally. I was using a program called Tabletop Simulator and it's something available on Steam. It's really handy for, you can load up this virtual space and you can create a board from a graphic and it just bloop, it pops in.
I think I've seen
and,
some videos on that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's fantastic for prototyping because what I used to do is prototype manually, printing it all out and cutting it. But then you spend, you know, days doing that
right,
and you go, oh, I got to redo this deck. And in Tabletop Simulator, it's like, oh, I can just edit the image, re-upload it, and I have a new deck and I can test these things. And because I'm in San Francisco and he's up in Seattle, that was another nice thing is that we could just log on. He could see what I'm looking at. We can move it around, talk about it, draw on the table, make notes. And then I would just iterate. And there was just a ton of iteration, which is very much, I think, his superpower, one of his superpowers. So yeah, we just kept doing that until eventually it was like, okay, now this is playable. It kind of starts to make sense and we're rolling dice and moving pieces around and drawing cards and like, okay, now it's starting to become a real thing, but it's just a lot of trial and error. A lot of stuff doesn't work and you just kind of keep, you know, coming up with new ideas.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about that a little bit with Stardew Valley too, of like, how crazy it is that one person made that game and how hard it is as a creator, as a game designer, as a musician that we are, like how hard it is to critique your own work and being able to like throw it away and start over because you just put so much time into it. And it feels like every time something has to go that you're just starting from zero again.
There is a period of mourning, I feel like, after every failure where you're like, ah, that didn't quite work. And I needed to step back, collect myself again. I think it's important to think of everything as a prototype, because then it's easier to kind of say, okay, I built this thing, didn't really work, that's okay. Because after you keep doing that, little bits of what works sticks around and then kind of comes together into the final product. And so, yeah, it's just about, one time I heard him say something like, extreme criticism, but also extreme faith in yourself. That, like, he said, I know what's wrong. I know I'm going to get better. So I'll just keep going. But I'm also not lying to myself about what I don't like, you know. And so he can kind of laser focus on the bad and then bring it up just through that iterative process.
Yeah. What is some of the differences, or maybe I guess both differences and similarities, of designing a video game versus designing a board game? How do you tackle both of those?
I think the thing that drew me to board game design is that I feel like I can get a prototype on the table very quickly. So it's like I can make a few cards, a board, I can move some stuff around, and I can very quickly determine if there's something there. Whereas in my experience, just a video game, to prototype it takes longer. And it takes more disciplines. Like, I'm not a coder, so I understand how it works and I've done a little bit, but I couldn't be like, ooh, I have this idea for a card game and just like make that digitally. I think people may underestimate just the time it takes to make something like a video game, even something you think is small, like a menu that can cycle through options and snap things to different places on the screen. It's like, that actually takes a lot of work. And after doing it all, you're like, well, it works now, but it doesn't look that great. It's like, I wonder sometimes the fortitude you need to have to like say, oh, now I'm going to remake that thing, that one element of this vast game that I imagine. And so I think there's just a lot of grind. Whereas board game design has a similar thing, but it's so much more accessible to me. So it doesn't feel grindy so much.
Well, and I think that's the big difference too, between like, I'm sure there are board game studios, video game studios, where they have teams of like dozens of people, where your only job is to make sure the trees look really good in this game.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, versus you as one person have to make sure every element and every step of the process is exactly the way that it needs to be.
Yes. And I think sometimes that can create issues, because that person who's in charge of making sure the trees look really good has no understanding or connection to the other folks that are doing different things.
Right.
And so that's why you end up with a video game where, man, these trees look great, but the story is awful and the gameplay is not good, but the trees look good because they just weren't connected. And in my experience, you know, I was working on mobile games in the Bay Area, and I was working with teams of very talented people. And my job as like a lead designer was making sure everybody understood what everybody else was doing, so that they were building what they needed to build. And some people got it, some people didn't. With what Eric did, it's like he's the sole designer of the whole thing. And so it was all connected in his head. And I think that's the cohesiveness of Stardew Valley.
Can you, because you were talking about your role as a head designer, as people who are trying to figure out what exactly that means, what does a game designer do in very like simple terms for dummies that, you know nothing about the field?
I think of it a lot as like an architect. The game designer, at least in the roles that I was doing, it's like you envision what it is, what it needs to be. You do research and you use your own intuition, and then you're writing up something or drawing up something saying, to try to convey that idea to usually the money folks first, so that they'll pay for it. And then they're like, okay, we'll pay for that. You've proven it, or we trust you. And then you take it to everybody else and say, okay, engineers, this is the systems that I need. And they go, how would I build that? And they start figuring out the actual, you know, mechanics that they're going to build in. And you tell the artist, this is where you're going to stick the art into this thing. And they're, oh, okay. So they start figuring out how big it needs to be or what's the best way to build the art. So yeah, it's very much that architect. And then once the game is sort of, you know, moving forward in production, you're making sure it kind of stays on track. You may realize things along the way don't work and you have to like, shoot, that system I thought was going to be great is not fun at all. We need to pivot and do something different. And then you have to like redesign it, but make sure it fits into this train that's already moving. And then you're testing a lot at the end and kind of making sure it landed where you hoped. So that's the overall thing.
Was there a game that sort of first inspired you to go into game design? How did you get into the field?
I think I was thinking about this, and there were a couple of board games I remember being very, like, blew my mind as a child. I remember my mom playing this game with me. I think it's called Dino Bones, and you're just like an archaeologist moving around, and you're collecting these bones that are like cardboard bones, and you put them in the little slots to build a dinosaur. And I just remember thinking, like, where did this come from? What is, like, who made this? What is it? And it just fascinated me, even though it was such a simple thing. I remember feeling like, I want more depth. I want more, I don't know, something. I didn't know what
more
it was.
More dino bones.
Yeah. I've always been a fan of dinosaurs. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I remember seeing Hero Quest, the board game. And that was like, I think my friend brought it over, and I think I borrowed it from him, and I maybe never gave it back because he forgot.
Okay, but borrowed, like, yeah.
Yeah, with this game, and I just was like, this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. And it, and then, of course, there were computer games too. Like, I remember Eye of the Beholder was like an old D&D game where it was kind of like first person, and you could turn and move. And games like Zork, I was like, wow, these are things that people made, and I'm having these experiences, and I would love to do something like this.
So yeah. Then you got an interest from those. What was then your thought process of, okay, now I'm going to pursue this? Were you looking at different universities? Was it different programs? What got you actually into the field or to get your foot in the door?
I kind of had a winding path for that because I kept making games, but I don't think I really thought, I didn't know how to make it a career. So I went to school, I landed on creative writing because I was like, oh, I'm going to be a writer. And if I can't do that, I will be a writing teacher and I'll educate. And somewhere on that spectrum, those things seemed like good, wholesome things to commit myself to. Mm-hmm. You know, I liked writing books. I liked talking about writing. So I would do some variety of those things. And I also was interested in film, but I kind of somehow gravitated towards graphic design because I was still making board games and card games, and then got into media where I was doing graphic design for companies. And then I met a graphic designer who went to work at Zynga, and he said, hey, they're hiring junior designers here. And I didn't have any real design experience professionally, but I don't know, I managed to impress them because I knew some things about making games that they were like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about, like probabilities and things like that. And so they're like, oh, sure, come on in. And they were expanding a lot. And that was my intro into bouncing around at these mobile game companies.
So we were going to ask what for an inspiring game designer, and you kind of already talked a little bit about getting your foot in the door, but what are some of the first steps that you would tell someone else? Because now it's so different with careers, and there's so many different options and things like that, so many different programs and schools. So what would you tell someone who is looking at getting into game design, how they would start doing that?
I think personally, the best thing to do is make games, like figure out, just get in there on your own and build stuff. Like I remember meeting a guy who had not gotten into the field yet, but he came to me, he was interviewing, and he said, I've made a game, one game a week, every week this year.
Wow.
And he showed me this portfolio of, and he's like, they're small, they're little things, but like, I was so impressed. I was like, wow, look at all this stuff. You just have this initiative. And so that's really like the hands-on, like get to know what you like about game design. Because there's also different things. There's like narrative design, level design, character design, mechanics, or economy. The economy is all math, basically, of how much gold, how much experience. So like when you learn what is it that really draws you to making games, then you sort of know how to take your skill set and like plug it in somewhere that needs that skill set a little bit sharper. Because I think when people are looking for jobs, they're like, well, I want to make games, but the company is saying we need somebody specifically for this one thing. And they're looking for that. And if you know what you're good at and they are needing that, that's, you know, a stronger match. And so I think it's just about like knowing yourself, doing a lot of work, and then networking as best you can, which is, you know, pretty painful, I feel like, these days. But I often tell folks who have reached out, like, if I was looking for a job right now, I would make a big list of companies and I would go on LinkedIn or other places like that. And I would reach out to just anybody at any level and say, hey, can I get like just 15 minutes of your time on a call and just to ask you some questions, and then ask them very specific questions about what they do or things you want to know, and see if that connects to some opportunity somewhere.
That's great. I mean, it's tough, especially like there's just so much out there. Yeah. Whereas when the, obviously video games have evolved so much, board games have evolved so much. Yeah. It's just hard to know who to reach out to, what to do, what the next step is. So that's great. Yeah. 'Cause I didn't even know about, well, I didn't even think about all this very specific, how specific it can get, and really getting into those niches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned the tabletop simulator. Are there any other good like websites, tutorials out there online to help get people started? Is there somebody out there, you know, making some good YouTube videos or something to make, to try to teach people the basics of game design?
I feel like there are a lot of resources. Like none pop into my head. One program that I like a lot is called Game Maker Studio, and it's a very accessible game making tool, but it can do very complicated things. And if you look, it's been used to make some, I think, pretty popular games. That's one that I recommend looking into. And then I often tell people, like, don't worry too much about like the platform you pick, like whether it's Unity or I think Godot or some of these things. Just pick something that seems, oh, I'm interested in this, and just find tutorials and do them and get familiar with the tool and really just feel it out. Build something small, you know, because then it's like, oh, I built this cool little thing. What could I build next? Or can I expand this? I think that's the way to go about like investigating in those resources.
Are there any gaming pet peeves that you have, like things that you see in a game that just really kind of just irk you?
Yeah, I would say there's two things. For board games, a bad rule book. Like if I'm struggling to understand the game, like I have a lot of games and I read a lot of rule books. And if I'm like, oh, I can't figure this out, it's like maybe there's something with the order of the rules or the organization of it that just isn't working. Another one is just, so I think, unnecessary complication. So sometimes there are systems or rules in place where you're like, I get what they're trying to do, but the game would just be more fun and faster if they just condensed down, got rid of this weird rule. And like, I've had experiences where I was making a game and I made a system and I was like, what am I trying to do here? I have this like complicated combat system. I'm just trying to determine if one player beats the other player. So I can do kind of almost like a rock, paper, scissors thing here and have it be just as good. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you throw out this big complicated thing and then you're like, I got three symbols. You match the symbols. That's it. And there's some little rules that make it interesting. So I think just condensing down, and games that haven't been condensed to me feel like they should have play tested it more, or I don't know, something was off.
Yeah. I think we have a few board games down on our shelves like that we have either had to go to like Reddit to try to figure out how other people solved this problem.
Yeah.
And, or like something that we played once that took us like hours to get through that are just, we'll probably just forever collect dust on our shelves now.
Yeah. Yes. Because that's the thing. You've got to load it in your head, and your head is the processor. And if you're like, I'm not enjoying processing this. There's a game called League of Dungeoneers, which was a Kickstarter by like this one guy. Mm-hmm. The rule book is riddled with errors and could have been so much better. But strangely enough, for some reason, I find it to be one of my favorite, most charming games because the design of it is so good. And the clunkiness in the rules, I think there may be like translation issues too. So it's like, that might be part of it. But for some reason, that one doesn't bother me. But when I have like a 10-page rule book and there's mistakes, I'm like, come on, you could go through this. I mean, League of Dungeoneers has a book this thick. I understand why there's like problems, you know.
Wow. Yeah. Well, on the flip side, is there a game or games that is like near perfect where you're like, man, this is the one to copy. They really nailed it here.
That's an interesting question because I feel like I have different games for different groups or different moods and situations. So it's like, is there like this perfect design? I think it really depends. Like you start getting into like, what am I trying to do? Like, is this a party game? Because I have games that take 6 hours to play. And then I have games that take 5 minutes to play. And they're just different, like a really short, simple one that I love and think it's amazing. It's called Left, Center, Right. And there's virtually no choices. You roll dice. It tells you, do you give your chips to the people to the left, to the right, or put it in the center, or steal? And everyone laughs at it when I first bring it out. But everyone has so much fun stealing and seeing where it goes. And I'm like, this is like the simplest rule set, but the most amount of fun and like almost zero teaching. So I find it very impressive when somebody can do something like that. A game on the other end of the spectrum is like Robinson Crusoe is a very complicated, I should say complex, cooperative survival game. It takes a long time to set up. It takes a long time to play. It's like really brain burner. Everything feels bad. You know, you're like, oh, we're running out of food and the weather's changing and we got attacked by an animal and you're wounded. But like the way the systems come together, I think is just genius. And I keep coming back to that one like time and time again.
Are you playing any games right now? Is there a game you're just like really, really into right now?
Ooh, I've been playing a lot of video games with my kids lately, which has been really fun. Like we've been playing like Super Mario World, like the Super Nintendo one.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were playing Mario 64 and they were just like, what is this? This is like a weird relic from the past.
This isn't a video game. What are you talking about?
Yeah. I mean, my kids are 4 and 7 and we were playing Skyrim and they were like, wow, this is amazing. Let's go over there. And I'm like, all right. And I'm driving. But we've also been doing some board games, which has been fun. My 7-year-old is really, she just picks stuff up and then she beats me even when I'm trying really hard. And I'm like, okay. I'm very proud of you.
And that's when you bring out the 10-page rule book and you say, all right, okay, here's a real game.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's a real game.
But so it's been fun. I can't think of too many that I've been playing a lot. I mean, League of Dungeoneers is set up on a table next to me in my office and I just leave it there and play on it every once in a while. It feels like an RPG I can play by myself. And the one I keep coming back to is this really weird, obscure game called Magic Realm, which was published, I think, in the 70s. And it took me about 10 years to learn how to play it.
Oh, no.
Look this game up. It's fascinating. It's genius, but it's so unlike any other game. And it's not that hard to learn, but it's really hard to learn how to actually play it well and not just die immediately. And so it's so compelling. It feels like the Lord of the Rings of board games. So that's one that I keep thinking about.
That's pretty high praise.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it took 10 years of commitment to play it.
Kept reading these rules and I'm like, I think I understand. But then I would start playing and be like, hold on, I got to go back. And I'm flipping through and it was just... It's a tough one, but it's worth it, though. It's really good.
Well, we don't want to take up much more of your time because you've been very generous with your time. But I did want to ask, are you currently working on any projects that the people should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, I have a personal project that I'm excited about. I published a card game some years ago called Gubs. And this is a game, the first version was created, I think I was like 10. And then we worked on it for a long time, my brother and I. And when in my 20s, it got published and picked up by this company called Game Right. And then they ran with it for about 10 years and then it went out of print. And so I'm trying to bring it back. And so I have new artwork. It's the same game, but I'm just like repackaging it and self-publishing it. So that hopefully is going to come out next year, but I have a lot of work to do. And I don't know, I'm just trying to find time to do it.
That's cool, exciting, though. They made when you were 10, and I was like, that's awesome.
It's been the first version we self-published, and we printed like, I don't know, maybe 1,000 copies, you know, kind of like at a local print shop almost, like sending us copies, and my parents were shipping it out from their garage. Oh. And it's very much like a family kind of cottage craft kind of thing. There's a lot of Gub fans out there. Apparently, it really took with little kids and families. It's a very luck-based, but it has some strategy kind of card game. And I'm just hoping to like reprint it and then see what happens. So,
yeah. Well, I know what we're going to go look into later tonight.
We're going to check out Gubs.
We're going to go check out Gubs.
Yeah.
No, it's that's fun. Exciting. That's awesome. And I think, again, just with the whole self-publishing thing, like it's crazy to us as people who don't do that sort of thing, that there are people like you, there are people like Concerned Ape who are capable of doing every aspect of this by themselves. because it takes such a long time to learn how to just do one of those things. You know, like being a publisher takes time to learn how to do that the right way and market the right way and all that stuff. Being a designer, being a developer, that like someone that does everything, just it. I can't comprehend doing all that. It's impressive. Yeah. It's amazing.
Thanks. Yeah, he blows me away just with his dedication to the art, music, all the different elements. Like I've talked about it with some of my friends who are also like makers, I would say, and you just get obsessed with something and you're like, I want to make this thing. And you're like, well, what do I need? I need graphic design. How do I do that? And you just start like, you just can't stop really. And when you hit a wall, it's like, okay, who can I pay that can do this thing? Yeah. And can I afford it?
Yep.
You know, so you're scraping together money and like, and you're just like eking by and all these things. But it's, I don't know. There's just something that you're like, I need this thing to exist. And I've come this far. So I have to like, keep going.
Yeah. Well, and that's how all the best stuff, the best music, the best games, the best art, the people who literally just, it's the first thing they think about when they wake up and it keeps them up all night. And we need more of those kind of people in the world who are willing to obsess over things like that, because that's when the good stuff happens.
That's
when the really, really, really good stuff happens.
I think if you just kind of keep working on something with dedication long enough, it will turn into something amazing. I mean, your family might be driven crazy by you because you're like, every time I'm like, oh, I got this new idea. People are like, oh, here he goes again, the board game stuff. But they're also supportive as well. And you just kind of one step at a time, I guess.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you again for sitting down with us. We really appreciate it. It's cool now that we got to make a connection like this.
Yeah. And
we got to talk a little bit about this. And we're definitely going to be looking out for Gubs here soon.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Gubs will be on our board game shelf for sure.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. And we're going to go out and find a copy of Stardew Valley, the board game now.
Yeah, for sure. Sounds good.
We gotta make sure we stock our shelves up now. So we really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us this afternoon you, tonight for us. So we're glad we were able to make this work with the time difference.
Yeah.
No, it's all good. Well, thank you again. Thank you again. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good to chat.
Yeah. Yep. Bye-bye.
Have a great night.
See ya.
So what was your biggest takeaway from that interview?
Just what a nice guy. First and foremost, like
pretty good guy.
Yeah. I mean, just taking his time to talk to two goobers.
He volunteered his time.
Yeah.
We paid him $0 and 0 cents. He just loves talking shop. And
yeah. It was really evident about that he loves what he does and is more than happy to share that with anyone else who is interested and to help anyone who is trying to just learn a little bit about the gaming industry. Just really, really cool guy.
I think it was really cool. And maybe this is just my old man side of things coming out. But like, I really like how, quote unquote, old school he seems to be about his things. He mentioned that he was very big into like still trying to paper and pencil his way through ideas.
Right. And when I said that,
cards and trying to do physical things that obviously we have computers to do now. He did mention some of those things as well, but it's always cool to me when you hear about the people who are still kind of doing things the old fashioned way. Cause I feel like it just adds that element of creativity, that tangibility of like, this doesn't work the way I want it to.
It's like the same kind of concept where like, the like special effects in movies where like Jurassic Park, those were insane. It just looked so good and it just had a different feel versus like having it all CGI. So when I said that, cause I said like, oh, I'm imagining you cutting up cardboard and stuff. And
you weren't thinking he was going to be legit about it.
I was kind of like joking, but just assuming that what I was visioning was just completely off, but he was like, no, I
him like, actually sitting there like,
yeah. And so he's like, yeah, I do that. And I'm like, that's super cool. And
no, I love that. I would love, Cole, hopefully you're listening to this, watching this. I would love to see pictures of like those prototype things.
Well, and actually
that would
be
so cool. Like, can you email us just dumb little photos of what those little like, I think that's so cool.
No, it is very cool.
It's such a cool little like,
I love the behind the scenes aspect of, and I'm more of like, I keep like talking about movies or thinking about movies, but now that I know a little bit more about game design, now I want to know how all the things, because actually my parents were just in town. They just left today. Yesterday, the four of us played games together and I made the comment, we were playing Fire Tower, and I made the comment, I was like, wow, this artwork is really pretty. Like, you could see someone used watercolor for the actual board. And I just then was thinking like, oh, like someone probably drew that, painted that up, and then it got printed and just, I don't know.
It's really cool. Yeah, that behind the scenes stuff is always super interesting.
I have a newfound love of an appreciation of game design.
Yeah, and it goes both ways, because he also mentioned that, you know, being able to build the game online gave him a chance to play it with Concerned Ape.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have to be in the same room together. They could play it across states and be able to make that happen. So it's cool that he works in both mediums. Yeah. That he can take something physical, put it in online, and you know, play test that way. I think that was my biggest takeaway, was, you know, his process, and also just kind of how he described what it means to be a game designer. You're trying to pitch your ideas to people who have the money to make the game. You're going on Game Shark Tank and you're looking at Game Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
And you're going, "Sharks, I have this wonderful idea for a new game. I need your money because everything costs a lot of money to make." I didn't even thought of that side of things. I know.
And then the fact that they go, "Oh, well, we have X amount of money, so we can do this.
How much can I do, and how much can I afford to hire somebody to do the stuff that I can't do on, can't do on my own? I really liked the way that he explained it. We asked him very nicely to explain it to us like we were five.
Yeah.
Because we don't understand those kinds of things. But I always appreciate when people are able to articulate those things in a way that we both walked away with a very better understanding of what it means to design a game. Whether it's a board game or a video game, they're all very similar concepts. What it means to just be a designer and be sort of the architect behind the scenes of a creation that other people, maybe if you're working with a big studio, then have to go off and make. Or you, if you're Cole or if you're Concerned Ape, are sitting there and trying to meticulously create these things all by yourself.
And as teachers, I feel like I had a good, like, I just really, really would want to reiterate how appreciative of him sharing his information and his passions with us, because it's a nice kind of to see the other side of that. And now he's teaching us about it, about something that we have no idea about.
It was cool for us to be students for a little while and get to learn about it.
And how he
was,
like you said, very articulate in explaining it to us.
So. It was great. And I really liked his explanations of how, again, it seems like a very old school approach when we asked him about, you know, how can somebody get started in game design? And his response was basically like, just start doing it.
Yeah.
Just do it. Make a game.
And I like, and see that's what kind happens. Of the tale as old as time for anything,
any
right?
Any form that, of art, any form of media.
Yeah. I appreciated the fact that he kind of broke it down, and I never really thought about how specific things got. And or you do think of it, but just hearing it from him and saying, just keep creating, find what you love about creating,
right,
and then really hone in on it,
because companies are not looking for a broad spectrum game designer.
Yeah.
They're looking for a game designer. One of the things he mentioned, and what really stuck out to me, because I thought it was really cool too, they're looking for someone who can build a video game menu.
Yeah.
And can you make it efficient? Mm-hmm. Can you make it look good? I can think of plenty of video games that the menus are so convoluted and complicated just to get to a setting that I want to change some graphics on a game or something.
Or how many menus I don't think about. Right. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that.
Because
I mean, that's
that
obviously
intuitive.
A design that had to be, had a lot of thought put into it.
And you
it.
Don't have to think about it, because it was just that intuitive. Mm-hmm. It just works. Your brain just knows how to do it.
Yeah.
But I also liked, you know, he mentioned building the economy of a game.
Yeah.
You know, if you're really good at math and you want to design a game, figure out how the resource system in your game is going to work.
Crazy.
You know, how are your players going to manage money and resources? And I was like, of course that would take somebody to figure out.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to begin. But duh, of course, idiot. That is something that somebody has to figure. In every video game, There's some form of currency. Yep. There's some form of research or a resource. It's not always called money. It's not always called gold. But like, you have to tell people, teach people how to manage resources. Mm-hmm. And you have to come up with the economy of one
make
rock.
It make sense.
One rock costs two gold. Mm-hmm. Is that a good thing? Is it too much? Is it too little? And how much play testing goes into that? It's that was really fun for me. I liked hearing him talk about the economy of it all. Because again, it's not something we think about because the games I play, I really enjoy. That's just an intuitive part.
Right.
I know it costs this much money for me to go buy this suit of armor in this game. Mm-hmm. I don't have to think about the why does it cost this much money? Mm-hmm. Because the player can get to that point, or because it's really hard to get to that point, or you've done a job that just paid you that much money, so now you can go get it if you want to.
Yeah.
It's cool to think about that stuff. I'm going to be looking at video games and board games a lot more meticulously now, I think. I think I'm really going to be like looking at those things a lot more, thinking to myself, why did I just pay 50 gold for this thing?
Yeah. Well, and even like now, going back to Stardew Valley, that was done by one person.
Yeah, he came up with the
and we had already
himself.
Talked about that, but now I have an even wider knowledge of it.
Appreciation for just how much
that maybe that's why spaghetti was 300 whatever.
I do have a question. So now that we are on the topic, maybe Concerned Ape is very anti-alcohol. Why does one beer cost my entire day's salary in Stardew Valley?
Well, coffee was $2.50.
Maybe he's very anti-alcohol. Maybe we learned something. He doesn't want people to drink, so he made drinking in his game so incredibly expensive that you would never want to do it. Because I'm telling you right now, I'm never going to buy a beer in Stardew Valley because I will go into debt. I will be homeless. I'll have to give up my little pixel dog
and then
for
there's
one
people
drink.
Probably screaming at us like, oh, well, actually, you need to get a beer when you meet so-and-so.
You got
to
go give the homeless guy in the game a beer.
Actually, didn't Pam want a beer?
I think Pam wants a lot.
Well, yeah. She wanted more than one beer. No,
I don't think
cola.
The game sells cigarettes, but that's what Pam wants.
But yeah, other appreciation on that end.
And for better or for worse, I'm going to be a lot more meticulous in the way I think about games now.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm going to be like really just thinking about those things to myself. And I think it makes me excited to even go back and now replay some of the games I haven't played in a while. Even some of the games I didn't originally like. Maybe I can find a new appreciation for some of these things when you start thinking about all of those details.
And I really think that after our interview that inspired us to pick up a board game, because I think it was like right after that we played a game for the first time in like
it had been
a long time
since we actually sat down and played a board game. And we got off this interview and then like the next day we're like, do you want to play a game? Like we should pull off one of these things off our shelf, dust it off, and play some games. And we've played games since then. It's been quite nice.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this conversation.
And I think the resources that he dropped were super insightful because we did a little bit of research on them and it just seems like they are pretty accessible and are user friendly. So if you walked away inspired by this interview, definitely check those things out. And even like looking up some
of
those.
Well, we looked up Game Maker, right? Mm-hmm. Can you mention Game Maker Studio or whatever it's called?
And Game Maker was used to create Undertale.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was cool to learn about where
it was
cool. This big game is
made on a simple software that somebody who's just starting out could make.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of that was kind of Cole's whole point was the next Stardew Valley is out there. Mm-hmm. The next Undertale is out there. And those are pixel games.
Yeah.
They're not the most beautiful looking games, but
they're not the most realistic looking games.
Right. They have the ideas behind them. They have the people who are willing to put in the time. Mm-hmm. You know, just create.
Yeah.
See what happens. Prototype. Throw things away that don't work. And the resources are pretty easily accessible to you if you want to. I mean, we looked it up in a matter of minutes and we could have downloaded Tabletop Simulator and Game Maker
and there are, of course,
and,
you know,
everything.
A bajillion videos on YouTube that went with all of these softwares.
I know that Steam also has RPG Maker.
Yeah.
You can make you can make your own RPG off of Steam software if you want to. So the opportunities are out there. And that was this whole point. Like, just do it.
And find the people, like maybe the creators that you like and reach out to them and just see what happens. I mean, he said,
that's what we did.
Right.
That's literally what we did.
We got this opportunity.
We emailed Stardew Valley and Cole responded.
Yeah.
And was like, hey, I'm super happy to answer questions on his behalf. And we responded and said, that's cool, but actually, do you want to just chat about game design stuff?
And we're like, the worst thing you could say would be no, like, or hey, not respond.
Would you be okay with just talking about game design? He was like, would I be okay about talking about game design? He was like, yeah, I love that stuff. You know, we were able to set that up. I mean, just do it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Just put yourself out there and create things. And as creative people ourselves, like it was just mm-hmm. very nice to hear that from another person.
Go into it with the understanding that you're very likely going to fail a lot, right. But you have to get over that. You have to see past that to the small little successes and just build off of those things.
And it's also cool that he didn't necessarily, or not necessarily, he did not start out like right out the gate in game design. It's not mm-hmm. like he was like, oh, I'm going to go to college or go to school and study game design.
He thought he was going to be a writer.
Right. And who knows even at that time if there were any programs available.
Yeah. You can definitely go to college for this stuff now if you want to.
100%. So it was just cool to see that trajectory and how that happened by him putting himself out there and experimenting and creating. And then now he's doing what he loves. And that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Especially at the end of our conversation, he said, if you work on something long enough, it will turn into something amazing. People have said that, and it's something that in the back of our minds tell mm-hmm. ourselves, yep. but it was just really cool to see someone who actually did that.
Who practices what they preach
and
does that stuff. Yeah, I agree. So Cole, you're a cool dude.
Yeah, we like you a lot.
we like you a lot. And you like Jurassic Park, so that's cool
too.
Yeah,
so you're, yeah.
You needed a Star Wars music video, so that's pretty fun too. Yeah. How about a little gaming news?
Yeah, let's do it.
There's not much to talk about.
Okay.
Not a whole lot has really been happening, although unless you've been living under a rock, you know that the Game Awards are getting ready to come up. The biggest talk is about the Game Award 2025 Game of the Year nominees. The nominees this year include Clair Obscur Expedition 33, of course.
To no one's surprise.
To no one's surprise. Death Stranding 2, I think to probably no one's surprise. I haven't played that game personally. Silksong, mm-hmm. no one's surprised.
Woohoo!
Hades 2, Kingdom Come Deliverance, and to everyone's surprise, Donkey Kong Bonanza.
I honestly, you say to everyone's surprise, there's a reason it's up there. People love that game.
Oh, I know people love the game. The reason it's up there is to just keep Nintendo happy.
Yeah.
It's not my game of the year. I think Split Fiction should have been up there.
Yeah.
It didn't get nominated for game of the year. I think it got nominated for best multiplayer game. But Clair Obscur Expedition 33 walked away with 12 nominations. So it now holds the record for the most nominated game in the history of the event.
I think they're going to sweep.
I think they're going to sweep everything. I voted. You can go online right now and vote for game of the year. It's all public voting. You can vote for all the categories. I will be shocked if they also don't win original soundtrack.
Ugh.
If they don't win best score,
it's rigged. It's rigged.
Somebody paid them a lot of money.
Because you had multiple times like called me in while you're playing and was like, just listen to this. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy. But then he put on the soundtrack while we were playing games the other day. And I was like, this is insane. I was not expecting. It's just gorgeous.
I will go off.
They
on
have
a limb.
No right to be that good.
I will go off on a hot take that others are absolutely allowed to disagree with, but it might be the best video game soundtrack ever created, from top to bottom. It might be the best video
stunning.
Game score ever created. I know the Zelda fans are going to come after me, and I know maybe the Skyrim fans will come after me, but.
Not that they're not good scores, but like from a nostalgic point, everyone's going to be like, oh, I love this and this. Mm-hmm. But like,
I don't listen.
As two musicians, I feel like with four degrees between us, I feel like we could.
We're experts.
I feel like we can chime in and be like, technically, like mm-hmm. it's stunning.
I don't listen to other video game soundtracks in my spare time. I have listened to Clair Obscur start to finish multiple times.
Yeah.
But yeah, so 12 nominations for Clair Obscur. Ghost of Yotei and Death Stranding 2 came in a not-so-close second with 7 each. Mm-hmm. Silksong has 5. And just because we are, in fact, a co-op channel, we'll tell you guys that Split Fiction has four nominations. I think Best Family Game, Best Multiplayer Game, Best Narrative.
No LEGO Voyagers.
LEGO Voyagers is nominated for Best Multiplayer or Best Family Game, and I did vote for that one. Game. I didn't vote for Split Fiction.
We need to finish that.
I voted for LEGO Voyagers.
It's so cute.
I did not vote for Split Fiction. But no, that's pretty much it. That's all the big gaming news. There really isn't a lot happening. It's kind of crazy with the holidays coming up that people are not like really trying to push a lot of stuff. Someone bought a graded copy of Fortnite for like $42,000.
Ew.
Like the original Fortnite. Oh. Xbox for like $42,000.
Sure.
Whatever. If you have the money, sure.
Good for them.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. I don't know.
I'd spend $42,000 on something stupid too if I had spare change.
Right. Yeah, that's true. What would you spend $42,000? Like a nerd, like a look nerdy. What's behind I know, but like what if like coming like right off the bat, what would you what's something that
I
like,
would spend that much money on like a graded sealed copy of like Pokemon Blue or something.
Mm.
But to me that makes more sense cuz it's also like a 30-year-old game.
Yeah.
Fortnite's like 8 years old, 10 years old.
I'd get like some kind of like Star Wars figurine.
Oh, of course you would. Absolutely. For $42,000.
Like an original, either
Hayden
like a prop.
Hayden Christensen better come to my house and smooch me.
Well, I just mean like a prop or like.
Oh, yeah. From the movie.
Something. Yeah. Would be.
What would you buy for $42,000 if you had a spare $42,000?
Yeah. Just laying around.
Know. Yeah. What nerdy things would you buy?
Well, with that, we are going to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for listening. And another huge thank you to Cole Medeiros for taking the time to talk with us. It was a really insightful conversation. We really enjoyed doing it and hope to do more interviews in the future. So let us know what other people or topics you would like us to cover next.
And if you liked hanging out with us, take a second to hit that follow or subscribe button. Like the video if you're with us on YouTube. Maybe even leave us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast app. Every bit of support helps more people find the show.
We will be back in 2 weeks on December 16th, which is my birthday week, 2 days before my birthday, with episode 9, where I try to guess the game from the review.
Anna turns full.
I did this last time, but we're gonna flip it and see how I do this time.
Yeah, so thanks for gaming with us.
Bye.
Bye-bye.